Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news. Stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview. It's the show where we don't take ourselves very seriously. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week. Through the lens of original thought, it's so good to have you back for another week on the most important broadcast on the internet. Well, as far as conservative talk goes, anyways. And I've got so much news this week that I just don't know what I'm going to do. Without football in our lives, I found myself gathering a lot more news this week than I had been in previous weeks, but I have to get something out in the open right off the top of the show. I took my young children out for a little snack at the Burger King play place, and we had a great time. But when we arrived home, came in the door, and there was my extremely attractive audio engineer watching the New England Patriots juggernaut as it continues to rumble, bumble, and stumble toward a Super Bowl victory. I couldn't believe it. She tried to shut the TV off, but we caught her. She was busted cold. Anyway, she told me that she realizes now that she never really hated Tom Brady, and she just wants confirmation that the team that defeated Tim Tebow and the Denver Broncos will indeed win the Super Bowl. And while it was a tight matchup, Tom Brady did come through, and, well, for whatever that's worth, my extremely attractive audio engineer, a closet NFL fan now, quite possibly a Tom Brady fan now. Talk about a bandwagoner. No. It's certainly not gotten that bad. And anyway, we've got to get on to serious news. There's a lot of serious news. And I want to start in Indonesia. Indonesia, I said. Now, I've got a report from CNN about the trains in Indonesia. Now, the report states that trains in Indonesia are often overcrowded. And so people sometimes hitch rides on the top of the train. And it's not necessarily that they're trying to rip off the train operators and steal rides. There's just no room on the train. So they pay their fare and climb up on top of the train. Because, you know, you don't sit in there with the goats and the chickens and the smell is really bad. So you get up on top of the train and you get the wind-blown hair. And it's probably a step up from riding in the train. But listen to what's happening in Indonesia. We've got folks on top of the train. So Indonesia's state railway, Kereta Api Indonesia, they've begun stringing concrete balls over rail lines to prevent people from hitching rides on top of its trains. Yeah, concrete balls. The devices are called goal bola bola.
Okay.
Goal bola bola, as they resemble soccer balls with a grapefruit-sized concrete ball strung from chains hanging above the train, the railway said. It resorted to using the concrete balls after previous anti-roof rider efforts, including greasing the roofs, spraying the roof riders with colored water, and detentions and fines, didn't stop the practice of riding on top of the train. But, reports CNN, a human rights group says the concrete balls expose violators to a punishment as severe as death for the minor infraction of riding on top of the train, whether you paid your fare or not. And let me just state, ladies and gentlemen, even if you didn't pay the fare, you don't deserve to be crushed by a concrete ball for simply riding on top of the train. They just need to cane a few people, and maybe they need to think about expanding railway service.
You don't need to stone.
How about that? Yeah, we don't need to stone people for stealing a ride on the train, for crying out loud. Indonesia, you'd think they would come up with something more creative. They're obviously under the influence of the Los Angeles City Council, who sometime in the 1980s decided to string concertina wire, barbed wire, on all their street signs there in the greater Los Angeles area, making it look like a death camp or something. Anyway, I don't know what's going on there in Indonesia. Isn't that the world's largest Muslim country? Anyway, who's to be able to explain what government bureaucrats come up with in trying to prevent crime. Anyway, now let's move on to politics because it has been a big week in politics. I've got a story right here that I think will be, well, it has the potential to be the biggest story of the coming week, should it prove to be true. And we don't know yet if it is true, but this story was forwarded to me from one Greg Jackson, author of We Won't Get Fooled Again. I'm going to be interviewing Greg later in the week on Denver Radio. You can tune in to AM 670 KLTT. In Denver, I will be guest hosting Bob Enyart Live and interviewing Greg Jackson. Well, Greg sent me this article after Newt Gingrich's stunning upset win in the Palmetto State. This is actually from the Huffington Post, which I hate to give them credit for anything, but I'll give them credit for this. They've reprinted a story from the Wall Street Journal. The story goes something like this. The Wall Street Journal reported over the weekend in a story entitled Romney's Unorthodox IRA that Mitt Romney has between $20 and $100 million parked in his individual retirement account. Now, folks, you know as well as I do, and I'll go through the facts here in the article, but we've all had an IRA from time to time, I would assume. The Wall Street Journal reports that IRAs do allow individuals to avoid paying taxes on their current income and deferring all additional taxes till the funds are withdrawn. A maximum contribution limit on IRAs is $2,000 a year, right? We all know that. Well, and any amount contributed to an IRA beyond this maximum must be contributed after paying all of the required taxes. Now, we all scratched our chin during the debate and wondered, why is Mitt Romney so defensive about his taxes? Well, the Wall Street Journal reports that for Mitt Romney to have accumulated $20 to $100 million in his IRA suggests that somehow he's found a way around the $2,000 a year limit. Now, they do point out that back in the 80s, when 401ks first came about, you were allowed to put up to $30,000 a year in annual contributions. But, says the Wall Street Journal, even with making $30,000 contributions each year, it's hard to see how $20 to $100 million could be amassed in such a short time as the span of Mitt Romney's pathetic life. So this could be the key as to why Mr. Romney doesn't want anyone to look at his taxes, because maybe he's been cheating on his taxes. Which I don't have anything personally against people. I don't want people to cheat on their taxes. I do want people to pay as little tax as possible. Oh, yeah, is that the breaking news from my extremely attractive audio engineer? Mitt's going to release his taxes on Tuesday, so his campaign should be over by Thursday. Thank heaven. Thank heaven that'll be over. Perhaps the end of Romney? Could we hope? And how about this? How about the end of Barry Ho? Could it be? Listen to this story that was forwarded to me from Mike, the Las Vegas economist. This is Dateline Atlanta from the Associated Press. A judge has ordered President Barry Ho, Barack Hussein Obama, to appear in court in Atlanta for a hearing on a complaint that says Barry Ho isn't a natural-born citizen and can't be president. A Georgia resident made the complaint, which is intended to keep Obama's name off the state's ballot in the upcoming March presidential primary in the great state of Georgia. Well, a deputy chief judge in Georgia on this past Friday denied a motion by the president's lawyer to quash a subpoena that requires Obama to show up. Now, that's a lot of legalese. Quash a subpoena to deny the president. Basically, the judge is saying Barry Ho's got to show up in court. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this is a lot of fun, but I would be shocked if the criminal elite who control Barry Ho, and quite possibly Mitt Romney, I'd be shocked if they ever allow Barry Ho to be deposed in court or produce documents in court. But it should be fun to watch. And I just want to give a shout-out to Orly Tates. Congratulations, she finally won one. But I think they can probably kick this upstairs to a judge that's owned by the Chicago Machine, and it'll all... Well, maybe not. You know, where there's life, there's hope. And where there's hope that we can get rid of Ho. So we'll be watching this story, and I do appreciate my good friend Mike, the Las Vegas economist, for keeping us abreast of the whole birther movement story. Because while I'm not an avid birther, I do like to watch from the peanut gallery and make smart aleck comments. So we appreciate that, Mike. Now, let's move on deeper into the politics file with one Ann Coulter. Yes, Ann Coulter appeared apparently this morning on, let's see, Fox and Friends. I've seen this show. It is an unwatchable show. No self-respecting conservative should be able to watch this show for more than 5 minutes without becoming physically ill. And when Ann Coulter's on, it's probably 2 seconds. But according to the Daily Caller, on a Sunday morning appearance on Fox and Friends, allegedly conservative columnist Ann Coulter took a hissy fit explaining why Mitt Romney fell short in the South Carolina primary. She blamed South Carolina voters for Gingrich's success. Do we have a quote from Ann? I don't think we do. I don't think Ann said anything worth... Well, surely I marked out at least one quote here. What do I have marked out here? Coulter, who has been a Romney supporter since New Jersey Governor Chris Christie said he would not get in. She was asked if Romney should change his strategy, and she said, no, he's doing fine. So there's your quote from Ann Coulter. She thinks Mitt's doing fine, as her Adam's apple bobs up and down conspicuously. She thinks he's doing fine. She says, quote, with Newt Gingrich, you throw out the baby and keep the bathwater. Oh, so pithy. So pithy, Ann. It'll be interesting to see how fast she rolls onto the Gingrich bandwagon if Gingrich is able to maintain his momentum. By the way, Ann Coulter is one of the talking heads who has never given Rick Santorum an iota of support in any way, and she's a vile, disgusting human being. I don't think she's a conservative. I think she's a Trojan horse of liberalism, although she's fairly frail and skinny, so there's probably not a lot of enemies inside that Trojan horse. But I don't like Ann Coulter, and I don't appreciate her opinion on anything. Listen to what she says here. Now, we're gonna hold her responsible, Ann. Flag the tape, Ann. She says, quote, I promise you that if Mitt Romney or Rick Santorum had cheated on two wives, I wouldn't support Mitt Romney and I wouldn't support Rick Santorum. That's what she says. Now, we'll just see what she says when the nominating process shakes out, because Ann Coulter is fairly chameleon-like. Not only in that she has strangely elongated fingers and the ability quite possibly to eat bugs with a tongue. You know, that whole tongue thing that they do? That's not the only way she resembles a chameleon. She also has a tendency to change on a dime when it's politically expedient. What's that?
Like Romney?
A lot like Mitt Romney. No wonder she's in love with Mitt Romney. Anyway, she has to be feeling crushed because she has a visceral hatred for Newt Gingrich. And, you know, just seeing her respond to Newt getting the nomination would be worth watching. Now, I want to address Newt Gingrich because I'm not going to endorse Mr. Gingrich. And I haven't really endorsed anyone, although I have encouraged people and let you know that I would vote for Rick Santorum. And I will if he's still in the race when it comes to Colorado. And here's the reason. Flag the tape if you're on Newt Gingrich's staff, because we're going to hold you accountable. I want to tell you right now, Newt, that if something else disgusting comes up that I have to explain to my 10-year-old daughter, I am going to be eternally ungrateful to you. One of the reasons I have not jumped on board the Newt bandwagon is because I just don't know when the next shoe is going to drop and just how perverse and irritating and just gross it's going to be. I will admit that I thought he'd never survive his ex-wife. I really thought that was it. Newt's gone. And Newt turned it around, and it's just been a bizarre week. But I'm worried about Newt, because if I start getting into the election, start watching and talking about it, something might happen that I have to explain to Nicole, and there's certain things I just don't want to explain to her yet, Mr. Gingrich, so please. Please. Anyway, I'll throw you under the bus so fast that you'll have skid marks on your well-tailored suit, Mr. Gingrich. You know, it's like with Tim Tebow. You know, my daughter has never been exposed to professional sports at any level because you just never know what's going to happen with some of these players. They're going to be caught with a dead girl or a live boy, and you just never know what you're going to have to explain to your kids. And that's why I really love Tim Tebow, because I know, or at least I'm confident, that with Tim, I don't think there's going to be anything come out in the near or distant future that I'm going to have to explain red-faced to my innocent 10-year-old daughter. I'm blue. No, I'm not really feeling blue about it. I'm really not. I mean, I wish Santorum would have won, but well, he didn't win. And hey, Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum have both signed the personhood pledge, so I'm still open to supporting either one of them. And we'll just have to see how it goes. Willing to give them a fresh start. Newt being much more severely in need of a fresh start. But also being, as I've pointed out before, in my brilliant political analysis, that Newt Gingrich is the most recently chastised and converted. And so it's quite possible we might be able to work with Newt, and we'll just have to see how that... We'll have to go fish that Newt Gingrich book out of the landfill.
Oh, no.
No, we're never going to find that. It's gone.
I threw it away.
It's long gone. Yeah, up there on my shelf where Newt Gingrich, his book used to be, I now have a copy of The Plot by Bob Enyart. And I have a copy of We Won't Get Fooled Again by Greg Jackson. And I've got one, two, three. How many Michael Savage books do I have?
I don't
one,
know.
Two, three.
You got...
We didn't get his novel, right?
No.
No, because of all the dirty stuff in there. Yeah,
well,
we're not interested.
Read it all, so
oh, that's right. He read it all on the air. There's no need to buy. No need to buy Savage's book.
You took time off to get signature from you.
That's right, I did. Yeah, well, I'm glad we threw that book away. Newt deserved it, but he may very well deserve a second chance, and I'm all about second chances. I've had a half dozen of those myself, so I won't cast the first stone at Newt. All right, but let's move on deeper into the politics file, because there's some ugly, dirty, underhanded, low things going on that you need to know about. This is from CNS News. 2 days after President Barry Ho blocked construction of a major oil pipeline, his administration is touting its efforts to expand domestic production of renewable energy. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack. Vilsack? What an unfortunate name. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack announced last Friday that his agency has approved a $25 million loan guarantee to build a 5,500-square-foot biorefinery plant in Iowa. Yeah, the project, according to Mr. Vilsack and Obama's various mouthpieces, the project is expected to create or save, I have to do the math here, create or save 50 jobs, 54 jobs. Create or save 54 jobs for $25 million. I bet I could create more than 50 jobs for $25 million. Maybe I should apply for a job out there. Anyway, folks, by way of contrast, the Keystone Pipeline is estimated to create approximately 20,000 jobs. But the Barry Ho administration is going to go for the 50 jobs in biofuels, because that's obviously that's the wave of the future. We just haven't caught on yet. We're not avant-garde enough to realize that we're all going to be able to power our cars on cow poop. But Barry and Mr. Vilsack and the Energy Department obviously know better. Let's see. Now there is a caveat, ladies and gentlemen. Under the conditional commitment, that's right, this is a conditional loan guarantee. Under the conditional commitment, the company, Fiberite, must meet specified conditions before the loan guarantee can be completed. And I just off the top of my head, I think one of those conditions might be 10% kickback to the DNC, possibly the hiring of someone's brother-in-law or nephew or niece to be a part of the loan application and administration that'll be created to administer the loan for Fiberite. Those could be some of the conditions. There could be other conditions. I mean, I'm not in the loop on this, but I'm just telling you my opinion, what I suspect. All right. Now, with all this going on, you might wonder, indeed, is it the end of the world as we know it? Well, some people do. I've got a story here from Reuters, and they're over in England, by the way. They're a UK-based wire service, and they have an article... They have an article on preppers. Now, you've heard of birthers. You've heard of truthers. Are there other ers that I'm forgetting? I thought there was a third er. Birthers, truthers. Well, anyway, now there's preppers. And these are people who are preparing for the collapse of civilization. There's a subculture in America who are preparing, not for the end of the world, per se, but for the end of civilization, some kind of cataclysmic civilizational collapse. And they like to call themselves preppers, or maybe people who make fun of them call them preppers, but they've adopted it. I think it's kind of cool, prepper. Anyway, Reuters reports that a wide range of vendors market products to preppers, mainly online. They sell everything from water tanks to guns to survival skills. Conservative talk host Glenn Beck seems to preach the prepper's message when he tells his listeners, quote, "It's never too late to prepare for the end of the world as we know it," unquote. That's from Glenn Beck. There's an author quoted here in the article, author James Wesley Rawls. He has a survival blog on the internet, and he's considered the guiding light of the prepper movement. He says, quote, "We could see a cascade of higher interest rates, margin calls, stock market collapses, bank runs, currency revaluations, mass street protests, and riots." You read, and then there's ads on the side there, of course, for gas masks and bomb shelters. He says the worst case end result would be a third world war, mass inflation, currency collapses, and long-term power grid failures. Wow. I tell you what, that's enough to make you want to just run off to the wilderness and hide in a cave. But, of course, you're going to need your internet connection if you're going to want to buy all your prepper stuff online. Not sure how that's going to work out. Anyway, so let's see. One prepper in the article is quoted as saying, she says, quote, "I think it's silly not to be prepared. After all, anything can happen." And after the election of Barry Ho, ladies and gentlemen, I have to agree with this woman. That's why, as I've stated, I've decided not to kill those rabbits under the deck, because that's our food storage plan. But we do need water, and I noticed, dear, that we need more bullets. And I need to go do some target practice. I promised my 10-year-old daughter that when she was 10, I would teach her how to shoot. So when the weather warms up, I'm going to take Nicole out with the same Marlin 22 rifle that my daddy taught me how to shoot. And I'm going to teach her how to shoot. And I'm going to teach her just how the Marines taught me how to shoot. Get on your belly! Shut up! Look straight ahead! Sight alignment, sight picture, shut up! She's going to have a great day. It's going to be so much fun. She's been looking forward to it. She has no idea. I'm going to put that leather glove on her, and I'm going to make her pull that strap so tight that her arm turns blue as she's in the offhand position at 100 yards. She has no idea. Anyway, folks, where do I come down on the prepper situation? I say be prepared, because anything can happen, but don't lose sight of reality and be reasonable about it. But having some extra water, some extra food, some extra bullets and bandages and beans is not a bad idea. Okay, so you can call me a prepper if you want, but I'm not as prepared as some of the preppers out there, but I'd like to be more prepared. I wonder if Peter Piper was a prepper. I heard he picked a peck of pickled peppers, and a peck's an awful lot for one guy. Maybe he was worried about the end of the world as we know it. So follow his advice. All right, now not to get too depressed over the end of the world and Barry Ho canceling this and Mitt Romney and all. I don't want you to get too depressed, ladies and gentlemen. I've got an article from the Chicago Tribune from the personhood file in at least 12 states, reports the Tribune, including crucial national battlegrounds such as Ohio and Virginia. Anti-abortion activists are seeking to place personhood measures on the ballot this year. The measures vary in some details, but in general, they define human life as beginning with fertilization and are intended to ban virtually all abortions, even in cases of rape and incest. And folks, out at the March for Life this, well, yesterday, as a matter of fact, Saturday, our keynote speaker, Mike Adams, did a great job of pointing out how legalized child killing started in this country via the exceptions for rape and incest. And now we have wholesale slaughter on a scale not seen since the Nazi era. And so I think it's appropriate that we start by closing those exceptions in the battle to end legalized child killing. The Chicago Tribune goes on to report thus far, the personhood movement is 0-3, losing referendums in Colorado in 08 and 2010, and losing in Mississippi this past November. But here's a quote from Keith Mason, the president over at Personhood USA. Mr. Mason says, quote, these are defeats only if we quit. If we continue on, they are building blocks for success. And the crowd went wild. Yes, Mr. Mason, you are exactly correct. You know, the abolitionists didn't quit. And Martin Luther King Jr. didn't quit. And those of us who support the personhood movement and the leadership in the personhood movement, they're not going to quit either. And in fact, the next president of the United States is likely to be someone who signed a pledge to reinstitute the God-given right to life for every person from the moment of fertilization or cloning or biological development. As the article reports, the language varies somewhat. But the basic idea is that every person is a person, no matter how small, and no matter what their state of dependency or disability. Let's see, do we have anything else? Oh, authorities have given the green light to gather signatures for proposed ballot measures in Colorado, Ohio, Montana, and California. Legislators in Kansas, Virginia, Oklahoma, Wisconsin, Alabama, and Georgia have been working on bills that could lead to personhood referendums. In Nevada and Arkansas, there are campaigns as well, but they've been held up. They've been held up in court by lawyers employed by the child-killing industry. And you can imagine they're pretty flush with cash, the child murderers. They've got lots of money and lots of lawyers. So they're fighting. And in Florida, anti-abortion activists are gearing up to seek a referendum for 2014. We have a quote here from Vicky Cowart. She's the president of Planned Parenthood of the Rocky Mountains. And whenever you report on a personhood story, there's always a prominent quote from someone from Planned Parenthood. So that's got to tell you something about them. She says, this spokesmouth for Planned Parenthood, Vicky Cowart, she says, quote, it's very clear that one of the goals of the personhood movement is to waste our resources. Every dollar we're spending on getting people out to vote is a dollar not spent to kill those damn babies. Oh, I'm sorry. I misquoted. I apologize. She says, every dollar we're spending on getting people out to vote is a dollar not spent for birth control or sex education or breast exams. What's that now? Who goes to Planned Parenthood for a breast exam? I don't know. I'm sure people buy their birth control there. But anyway, Vicky, I just want to let you know that the goal of the personhood movement is not to waste your resources. The goal is your utter destruction, your unemployment, and the end of the child-killing industry. And we're going to get you there. We're going to get you there at some point. We are taking you there, Vicky. Well, that's if, you know, there's not that collapse of civilization. Of course, if there's a collapse of civilization, people probably won't want to kill their children. They'll need their children again. Now, let's talk about some other folks who want to take us somewhere as fast as they can. Listen to this. This is Dateline Jerusalem from AP News, the Associated Press. The Palestinians' top Muslim cleric made some comments at a political gathering of supporters of Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. Now, the Palestine's top Muslim cleric, his name is Mufti Mohammed Hussein, and here's what he said to the gathered supporters of Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. He said, and I quote, "The hour of resurrection will not come until you fight the Jews. The Jews will hide behind stones and trees,
But the trees and the stones will call, O Muslim, O servant of God, there is a Jew hiding behind me. So come and kill him. Unquote. That's the Grand Mufti of Palestine. by the way, Grand Mufti Mohammed Hussein, he is appointed to his position by the Palestinian president, one Mahmoud Abbas. And, of course, now he says his comments were taken out of context. Yeah, the whole thing about killing the Jews, that was out of context. He says, quote, I was speaking about the final signs of the day of resurrection. I did not incite, I did not call for killing. We are not at present at the end of days. But we hope to take you all there just as fast as we can. All praise be to Allah.
The devil says.
We've actually got some more news from the devil. As a matter of fact, the devil's in the news this week from the war file. This is reported again by the Associated Press, Dateline Cairo. Final results this past Saturday showed that Islamist parties won nearly three-quarters of the seats in parliament in Egypt's first elections since the ouster of Hosni Mubarak and the delightful Arab Spring that brought to you by Anderson Cooper and all the Palestinian boys that he fell in love with over there. The Islamist domination of Egypt's parliament, according to the AP, has worried liberals and even some conservatives. Now, I really hate it when they do this. The Associated Press is saying, now liberals in Egypt are people who are against the Islamists, and conservatives in Egypt, according to the AP theory, they're the conservatives. So they lump in the Muslim maniac terrorist killers, oppressors of women, and rapers of children. They lump them in with what they just call them conservative. And, we're not buying it over here, Mr. Associated Press. Here are the cold, hard facts. The Muslim Brotherhood won 47%, and the ultra-conservative Al-Nur Party won 25%. So that's 77% of the seats in the parliament are held by maniacs there in Egypt. Thank you to the Arab Spring. Al-Nur wants to impose strict Islamic law in Egypt, while the Muslim Brotherhood is much more moderate. They just want to kill all the Jews. Anyway, they're now all running Egypt, for whatever that's worth. Speaking of the end of the world as we know it. All right, now, some really disturbing news, and I'm surprised this hasn't gotten more play on conservative talk shows. A conservative Iranian lawmaker was quoted as saying last week that President Barack Hussein Obama has called for direct talks with Iran in a secret letter to Supreme Leader Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. A secret letter from Barry Ho to the Iranians offering talks. Yeah. This is reported by... Here it is again. They call him conservative lawmaker Ali Motahari. So a conservative in Iran is someone who wants to vaporize Tel Aviv. He's not a Tea Partier, just so you know. But the AP can't seem to tell. Oh, this is ABC. I'm sorry. ABC can't seem to tell the difference. They're right there with the AP. Now, conservative lawmaker, I should say maniacal Islamist radical lawmaker Ali Motahari says, quote, in the letter, Obama calls for direct talks with Iran. The letter also said that the closing of the Straits of Hormuz is Washington's red line. The first part of the letter contains threats, and the second part of the letter contains an offer for dialogue. Unquote. So that's what Mr. Motahari says. He says that Barry Ho wants to open a back channel with the mad mullahs of Iran and their puppet, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. The White House would not confirm the letter, according to ABC News, as well you might expect. ABC reports that the U.S. last month enacted new sanctions targeting Iran's central bank and its ability to sell petroleum abroad over Tehran's nuclear program. The U.S. has delayed implementing the sanctions, though, for at least 6 months,
worried about sending the price of oil higher at a time when the global economy is struggling. That's really, they could have just said, Barry doesn't want to institute the sanctions that could be very effective until after the election cycle is well in hand. And he'll keep punting on that one, ladies and gentlemen, until Tel Aviv glows. That's when Barry will wake up, if then. All right, now let's move on to China. Hopefully we'll hear more about that story this coming week. That's pretty disturbing that our fine, upstanding Christian president would want to open a back channel with the mullahs in Iran. Pretty disturbing. All right, now this is from The Cable, which is an online website devoted to foreign policy, from the Politics File. U.S. Ambassador to China Gary Locke, he said some interesting things this past week. He was on NPR, and he was asked by NPR's Steve Inskeep. He was asked, quote, do you think the situation is fundamentally stable in China right now? And U.S. Ambassador to China Gary Locke said, quote, I think it's very delicate, very, very delicate. But there were calls earlier this year for a Jasmine Revolution, and nothing came of it. I think it would take something very significant internal to China to cause any type of major upheaval. He says, I do believe that there is a power of the people in China, and there's a growing frustration among the Chinese people over the operations of government, corruption, lack of transparency, and issues that affect the Chinese people on a daily basis, and they feel like they are being neglected by their communist leaders. So things are perhaps more unstable in China than even I thought. Let's see. The Cable reports that the Barry Ho administration is expressing continued concern that we seem to have an increasing trend of crackdowns, forced disappearances, extra-legal detentions, arrests and convictions of human rights activists, lawyers, religious leaders, and ethnic minorities in China. So all is not wonderful and glowing in the world's most hollow economy. Yeah, it's hollow. It's a mile wide and an inch deep, ladies and gentlemen, and it could all collapse at any moment. Hopefully there are some preppers in China getting ready for all of that. And here's some more from the War File, from the Washington Times, out of our from their Inside the Ring post. And it's about Saudi Arabia. U.S. intelligence agencies, according to the Washington Post, are closely watching Saudi Arabia for signs that the kingdom will seek to develop nuclear weapons now that Iran has a full-fledged nuclear program. One key warning sign was the cooperation agreement signed this past Sunday in Riyadh by China and Saudi Arabia. According to the Saudi news agency, the agreement will seek a joint development of atomic energy of, oh, here it is, a joint development of, quote, atomic energy for peaceful purposes, which will help to meet the kingdom's rising demand for energy and cut its growing dependence on depleting resources, unquote. Yeah. The agreement was signed by King Abdullah and Chinese Prime Minister Wen Jiao. I always have trouble with these. Chinese Prime Minister Wen Jiabo. Wen Jiabo. Wen Jiabo. Oh, last week I Jiabo. Anyway, I apologize to Mr. Jiabo, but he's a communist, and I really don't care if I insult him. Back to the Washington Times article. Former Saudi intelligence chief Prince Turki Al-Faisal said back in December that, quote, our efforts and those of the world have failed to convince Israel to abandon its weapons of mass destruction as well as Iran. Therefore, it is our duty toward our nation and our people to consider all possible options, including the possession of these weapons. So, we're on the verge of a nuclear arms race in the Middle East, and do you folks remember? Obviously, many of us don't remember because we weren't alive. But when that first nuclear explosion took place at the end of World War II, it appeared that all mankind knew intuitively that this was the beginning of the end. I mean, you remember duck and cover, and bomb shelters and all that, right? In the 50s and 60s. And then after the Cold War, you know, we all seem to have, dismissed what appeared to be so obvious in 1945. What appeared to be obvious in 1945 was that civilization would indeed end in a nuclear holocaust. That seemed obvious in 1945. And we thought we'd gotten by. And I'm afraid that's not the case. And I mean, I'm not digging a bomb shelter in my backyard, but it's certainly something to consider. Can we expect anything else from fallen mankind than to destroy ourselves with a power that we simply do not have the capacity to handle in a peaceful manner? Or at least, you know, maybe a Christian people do, and we have. But now that the Muslims are going to have the bomb. Well, anyway, I mean, take it for what it's worth. You prepare for whatever you want to prepare for. I personally, I'm prepared to die and face God. So that's probably the best type of preparation you could make. I'm not so sure I want to live in a desolate nuclear wasteland. Well, I guess I would. I'd rather live than die. So anyway, we're not going to kill those rabbits. That's the bottom line to that story. All right. Now, let's move into less depressing news. Let's see, is this less depressing? Yeah, this is kind of funny, actually. From the Culture File, this is from CBS in Dallas. An as-of-yet unnamed product is being referred to as the Avoid the Ghetto app. The Avoid the Ghetto app by those who are concerned with where it will guide users. There's a new app that it's supposed to keep you away from bad neighborhoods. Download it onto your iPhone or your Android, and it's supposed to tell you how to avoid, the ghetto. Well, folks at the Dallas NAACP, specifically President Juanita Wallace, she says she's up in arms about this app. Now, Microsoft says the app will use crime statistics to determine what parts of town are to be avoided, but it's unclear where the data will come from and how it will be interpreted. Microsoft has filed a patent for the app, but the actual product is unnamed and it's not available yet. Now, opponents like the NAACP president Juanita over there, they fear it could hurt minority communities. She says, quote, "It's almost like gerrymandering. It's stereotyping for sure and without a doubt. I can't emphasize enough. It's discriminatory." Yeah. One fellow, according to this CBS article, who was visiting Dallas last week, said an app shouldn't have enough power to label a community. Well, what about the crime statistics? They don't label a community? Are they invalid? Are we supposed to suspend reason and drive through South Dallas? Excuse me. I don't think so. He says, look, a community might have a high crime problem, but it may have some great cultural and social things that you can do there, you know, if you don't get knifed. They might have, you know, there might be a ballet, and if you can make it through the hail of gunfire, you know, might be quite the ballet there in South Dallas. Now, Juanita over at the NAACP, she's concerned that this type of technology would continue to perpetrate stereotypes in Dallas and beyond. She says, what happens in North Dallas certainly ought to be no different than what happens in South Dallas. Well, that's the point, Juanita. It certainly shouldn't be. But you ask folks who live in Dallas, and they'll tell you that what happens in North Dallas is significantly different than what happens in South Dallas. She says, this is what ought to be. So we can't keep on doing this, she says. This technology is certainly going to pronounce and heighten discrimination to some degree. And, well, I suppose I agree. It will cause people not to drive through dangerous neighborhoods. And maybe Juanita should focus on the problem of why people don't want to drive through South Dallas. Maybe that's a problem we could start focusing on. Instead of screaming discrimination by average law-abiding citizens who just want to get to the ballet without being propositioned by a prostitute or offered crack cocaine. It's a Weekly Worldview.
And I don't think that's a theme for North Dallas, but hey, you know. we're having a little bit of fun here, folks. We're rounding third and headed to home, and we're not going to go through any bad neighborhoods. Well, actually, we're about to go through the domestic tranquility file, and it's awful, horrible. You know, there was a story last week that murder had dropped off of the top 10, I think, of causes of death in certain demographics. And I didn't cover the story because I don't believe it's true at all. I think it's all a shuck and jive. And the justice system, the justice industry, has simply changed the way they allot murder and count murder. And I didn't buy it. And so this week, I mean, you just tell me if you think that murder is less of a problem than it was last year or more of a problem. Here we go. This is from the Associated Press. Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, police are seeking four suspects and offering a reward in the beating death of Kevin Class. He was killed early Saturday after he shouted at a cab while he and several friends looked for a ride. Three men got out of a car behind the cab and kicked and punched Mr. Class till he fell on the sidewalk, severely injured. He died several hours later at a hospital. The apparently random and brutal attack was the latest in a string of killings in the city of Brotherly Love, where there have been 20 homicides so far in 2012, up from 12 at the same point last year. But murders, yeah, don't worry about it. By the way, the area where Class was killed is home to Independence Hall and the Liberty Bell, ironically enough, as if you needed a signpost, America, as to what's gone wrong with you. Here we go from the Domestic Tranquility File. Dearborn, Michigan, a woman is in the hospital after witnesses say she was assaulted at a Chuck E. Cheese's restaurant in Dearborn. The woman was celebrating her grandson's 7th birthday when she asked patrons at a nearby table to clean up their language. She asked them to stop talking dirty. So they told her to shut up. And then a man jumped over tables and started swinging. He punched the woman in the face, dragged her across the floor by her hair. She ended up in the hospital for a CAT scan, lacerations to her face and mouth. The incident, by the way, is the third time that a violent encounter has happened at three different Chuck E. Cheese's in a Metro Detroit. Doesn't say how old they were, but they were younger than the woman who was a grandmother. At a Chuck E. Cheese. They couldn't have been that old, right? Kids hanging out at a Chuck E. Cheese? You'd figure they're pretty young. Pretty disturbing. One bit of good news. The family was refunded their money by restaurant management. Thank goodness. Yeah. You know, I have done this on a number of occasions, ladies and gentlemen, when I've been in McDonald's and other places where punk teenagers are using filthy language. Last time I remember was on the pier in Oceanside. You remember that? These two kids were fishing, and I had my Nicole and the other kids, Zoe and the little one, Alexis. I'll remember her name. and they weren't like screaming and yelling, but they were using vulgar language. And I just said, "Hey guys, you mind? I got my kids here. Could you clean it up a little bit?" So they were initially pretty upset, I could tell. But within 20 minutes, they were helping Nicole hook the worm on and cast it and showing her how to fish. And it turned out to be a pretty good turn of events. Of course, I never ask young punk teenagers to clean up their language unless I'm carrying a gun. And I would advise you all to do the same. You know, don't interface with teenage punks unless you're armed. All right. Now, more from the Domestic Tranquility File, Sacramento, California. Last week, David Hernandez was walking to a local McDonald's when he caught sight of two small kids in the bushes next to a nearby motel. Thinking little of it, he went into the McDonald's and ate, but when he got out nearly a half hour later, he peered through the fence and realized the children were still there, and he could tell they were in trouble. He says they were huddled close together and their teeth were chattering. They looked like they were freezing. Well, he called the police, and officers were eventually able to locate the kid's mother. Her name is Ferris Martin. And they say she was in the very McDonald's that David had just ate at, and she was drunk. And her kids were outside freezing. Now, David says that he doesn't understand why anyone would do that. And it's still unclear as to why the kid's mom did it. Now, she claims to be homeless. But David Hernandez says he's homeless, too. And he still doesn't understand why the mom wouldn't bring her kids into the warm restaurant. I mean, what's going on with that?
I mean, drunk or sober. I mean, leaving your kids outside freezing? It's just bizarre. All right. More from the Domestic Tranquility File. Can we take any more? From Greene County, Virginia, a 5-year-old is accused of stabbing 3 people in Virginia. It happened last Monday at a mobile home park in Greene County. Police say the little boy used some sort of edged weapon. Neighbors say the incident started over a juice box. Yeah, 2 children and 1 adult were taken to the hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. A 5-year-old stabbing people over a juice box. But things are okay, folks. The state of justice in America, we've got the best system in the world. Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. Program that into the Ghetto app. Greene County, Virginia. You want to avoid mobile home parks there. I guess you want to avoid Chuck E. Cheese. Where was that? Detroit. And Fresno. I think you just want to avoid Fresno altogether. Detroit. Ladies and gentlemen. Let's well, yeah, Detroit. You could, you know, it'll circulate. If you're in Detroit, it's just going to say, get out, get out. That little lady's voice will come out. Get out of Detroit. But let's go to Fresno, ladies and gentlemen. From the Domestic Tranquility File. Last week, at an apartment complex in California's Central Valley, 2 adults and 2 children were killed in an apparent murder-suicide. A woman believed to be in her 20s was found with a self-inflicted gunshot wound. A man in his 20s or 30s dead of a gunshot wound. Also inside the apartment were the bodies of an 18-month-old and a 3-year-old child, believed to be the woman's children. All right. This is from the Culture File. We're out of the Domestic Tranquility File, and I'm sure you're all convinced that we've got nothing to worry about as far as the state of criminal justice in our country, he said sarcastically, facetiously. All right, from the Culture File, ladies and gentlemen, this is from Hastings, which is outside of Detroit. We're back in Detroit. The app must not be working. Police are investigating a claim that a teacher dumped hot tea on a couple of students who were fighting. They refused to stop fighting there at the school, and the teacher allegedly dumped hot tea on them. Yeah, the dispute happened last week at Hastings High School there in Hastings, just south of Grand Rapids. The younger of the 2 students involved in the fight did have minor burns from the hot tea, and the teacher was placed on administrative leave. Interim Superintendent Michelle Falcon issued a statement saying, quote, "We are always very concerned for the safety of our students and staff." Folks, if you buy that, you're gullible. If you think that the government school system is always very concerned for the safety of your kid, well, you're just gullible, okay? And you might be willfully ignorant if you buy that. I mean, if for whatever reason you are forced to send your kids into the government school temple on a daily basis, I'd encourage you to find a way out of that. But if that's the situation, certainly don't believe that they're concerned in any way for the safety or the physical or spiritual well-being of your child, because they are not. I mean, here you've got 2 kids in a fist fight, and what does the teacher do? She throws hot tea on them. How about wait until one of them wins the fight and then separate them and punish them? And find out the situation. Maybe the kid who got punched deserved to get punched. Anyways. All right, we've got one now. Ladies and gentlemen, from the Descent of Man File. Yes, the descent back into, back to caveman status. The descent back to the level of the savages who painted their bodies and ran screaming into warfare. Here's a story out of Georgia from ABC. A Georgia mother has been arrested for allowing her 10-year-old to get a tattoo. Yeah. Now, her son, this woman's son, 10 years old, asked mom if he could get a memorial tattoo for his 12-year-old brother who had died after being hit by a car. And mom said, yes, of course, get a tattoo. The young lad's name is Gaquan Napier. Gaquan. Isn't anyone in America named like Joe or Bill anymore? Can't pronounce these people's names. Anyway, Gaquan got a tattoo on his right arm with his brother's name and his former basketball jersey number. By the way, mom also has a memorial tattoo for her son on her right arm. But a Georgia law from 2010 states, it shall be unlawful for any person to tattoo the body of any person under the age of 18 except a physician or an osteopath. Apparently they might have some reason to have to tattoo a child, but apparently in all other cases it's illegal. Well, listen, Mom, I feel for you and the loss of your son, okay? And there are a number of ways that I would encourage you to memorialize the life of your 12-year-old son who died after being hit by a car. Other than defacing your body and the body of your child. I'm not a tattoo guy. Never was able to get a tattoo. I went out many a night with my servicemen friends and watched them get tattoos. Get the Eagle, Globe, and Anchor. They get the bulldog with the DI hat, you know. Get their girlfriend's name tattooed on their chest. And I, at least at that point in my life, I simply had never found anything that I felt a deep enough commitment to permanently etch it on my body. But I'm not against a grown adult going ahead and getting a tattoo in memoriam or for whatever reason. I suppose it's not a crime. It's not a sin. But just a little disturbing that Mom's got tattoos and she tells her 10-year-old, go ahead and get a tattoo. And I don't know, folks. It just gives me the creeps. What can I say, okay? I'm not a tattoo guy. If you're a tattoo person, well, I guess God bless you. You can be a tattoo person. We can probably still get along, right? I hope so. All right. Now, let's move on as we're heading into the station here, ladies and gentlemen. As you can tell, as Neil kicks up that guitar. All right, here we go. We're going to go to Phoenix, Arizona. From the Associated Press, a transient in Phoenix has been arrested after police say he skinned and ate a cat while camping inside a Phoenix warehouse. Yeah. The building's owners reported a burglary after they opened the warehouse Wednesday and heard blaring music. Police found 24-year-old Russell Christopher Halstad inside the building with his face painted and the cat's tail and intestines around his neck. Yeah. Now, he told police that he killed the cat because he was hungry. He also said that he was going to use its skeleton as party decorations. That's what he said to the police. He was arrested on suspicion of burglary and animal cruelty. I'm not sure how they're going to prove if he was cruel in the killing and skinning of the cat. I mean, he ate the cat after all. Anyway, Halstad had been released from jail just a few weeks ago, and he told police he had nowhere to go, so he camped inside this abandoned building, and apparently he got hungry, and, well, this poor cat strolled by, probably creeping up to him looking for a little snack, and, well, the cat ended up being a snack. Anyway. So anyway, there might be hope for this transient. Maybe he can find a job eradicating feral cats from the abandoned buildings in and around the greater Phoenix area. Or perhaps he could become a spokesman for the Occupy movement. And he could wear the cat's tail and intestines around his neck while he gives interviews on NPR. All right, that's all I got. I can't take it anymore, ladies and gentlemen. But I will be back next week, should the Lord tarry. Until then, I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, Denver Bible Church, Personhood USA, American Right to Life, Colorado Right to Life, Theology Online, and of course, my other brother Darren, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. Until next week, ladies and gentlemen, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.